Blog Talk Radio. Welcome, everyone, to the Dee Amberoli Show, and here I am live again, I think. Sorry I haven't done a show for a week, but a lot of things are going on and trying to deal with health issues and looking at the world in a different light. But the things I'm noticing is the condition we're in 2015. It's getting worse and worse in a way, but we can always change for a better day. Today, I'm going to start out talking about the world of insurance. You know, we got to have it. We got to have insurance. It's got to be automobile insurance, homeowners insurance. We have to have health insurance. We got to. We're paying somebody something to make sure that we have these items, a car, a house, our lives. And the benefit of the insurance is that it guarantees you somewhere along the line that if something happens, a catastrophe or whatever, you have your car restored and you have your house restored or your health restored because you have someone that is guaranteeing that even though, well, it's kind of risk, it's kind of a gamble, that you're putting more money in, less money in than they are, and they're looking at the fact it's a gamble, a risk. You may never use it. They gain if you never use it. But if you use it, then the gain is on you. So now, look at the world as we live in. Everybody has to have automobile insurance. They tell you, oh, it's going to cover, it's going to do this, it's going to do that. But folks, if you're in a car accident, by the time this stuff pays out, it could be a situation where your health gets a lot worse. That's my case. You're in the accident, and you think the insurance of the other party will kick in immediately. It could be a year. It could be 2 years. If it's an accident with injuries. Now, your car, if you're in a car accident and a car gets totaled out, you know, if you have a newer model car, you might be able to get some recovery of repairs, or they might restore your car depending on how high-end and what kind of policy you have. But the bottom line is that if they restore the car, it's never the same again. And then secondly, you're paying into a risk, a gamble. And the worst one is that of your life. You have a life insurance policy that basically when you buy into it, you know, somebody's like betting how long you're going to live. Now, it could be that you like think, oh, well, I'm protecting my family. But then I remember in ancient lore, back in the ancient days of ancient Rome, they said that Nero developed insurance because what he did was he killed off all the rich folks. Yes, because he was trying to build Rome again in gold. So he offered them insurance policies. Well, if you go commit suicide, I'll take care of your family. So that was the beginning of the insurance game. And then it went to Sun Trust Insurance, which was controlled by the Rothschilds. The first insurance companies came out of China. I did a lot of research on this. Because I found it interesting where all this insurance game came from. I was looking into the Titanic, and the Titanic, do you know, was not insured until after the Titanic had crashed on the ice and it sunk? Well, who benefited off of that? They made sure that they got that insured after. It wasn't insured before. And then I think of Lloyd's of London. That was a huge risk because the things that Lloyd's of London would insure is like the Elephant Man and things that you would never, ever think that, you know, would be problematic with insurance. Well, they insured things and items that nobody else would touch. Lloyd's of London insures most of these really tall, high-rise office buildings, and the ones that they insured during 9/11 happened to be the World Trade Center towers. Now, interesting enough, during that time, the insurance industry big guy, which is Lloyd's London, was met with this horrible, grievous lawsuit in 1993 with the first bombing that almost bankrupted Lloyd's of London. If Lloyd's of London went down, that means the Queen would have gone down, the economy in London would have gone down. It's all tied together. So in order to save Lloyd's of London, all of a sudden, a life insurance company took over the buildings of the World Trade Center, Zurich International. Zurich International, then AIG was involved. A lot of these insurance companies were not even involved with insuring structures or buildings. They insured lives. Everything seemingly came out all right because it seems like Zurich is doing okay, but it was interesting how they flipped over from being a life insurance company to one similar to Lloyd's of London. And they took the heat off Lloyd's of London because Lloyd's of London was no longer under the wrap of insuring those buildings. They were getting ready to go down. I saw the legal papers during 9/11. So now we have this level of insurance today that requires you have to have insurance. Too many things are happening. You don't know what might happen. Every single day, you just don't know. So you have to have insurance, which is a risk, which is somebody's taking a risk and they're gambling on you, your car, your home. Now, this brings it to the point of interest. A gentleman came to me recently, and I'm not going to mention the company yet. I had offered up that company to come on the air and investigate, and I haven't heard anything from them. But the issue is that he brought up the part and the point of insurance red lines. Well, when he mentioned that to me, I kind of like stumbled back a bit in my chair and sat down and I said, insurance redlining. And since I was a director of a mortgage company, I knew darn well they were redlining houses back in the day when people were getting mortgages. Back to the south side of Chicago, yet the houses too were too risky for a mortgage guy to give you money. So if it was under $100,000, those homes were not funded. So what happened was a lot of these houses ended up getting sold out, sold on the secondary market, then placed into these piles of derivatives that ended up, a part of the mortgage scheme. And guess who got affected the most? Was the African-American community, and they never, ever really talked about it. It was difficult as hell to get a loan for somebody that was black. The redlining was not only with the situation with the insurance, it went by your zip code. If you lived in a certain community, it was very difficult for you to get a loan. And then also, the requirements were, you had to have high docs, not low docs, A credit. You had to prove all types of income patterns in order to fund a house that was under $100,000. Whereas when I was in the mortgage industry, I was director of a mortgage company, I was seeing in other communities, people were going in there with no docs, low docs. Documents were stating that single white men were on the prowl. They were looking for single white men because those were the ones the banks wanted because they did not pose a threat. If they went in foreclosure, they could immediately get that house and use it as a gambling risk and these derivatives and swaps they were doing overseas. Now, many of us didn't know anything about this because it was a hidden process through the banking industry, through the mortgage industry. The people at the top knew what was going on, but the guy that came in for the loan, they had no idea. They had no idea what was going on when somebody asked them about interest rates. I was amazed to hear people coming through the door. People were coming through the door asking me, what's the interest rate? And we were told to muddle through it. We can't really discuss that until, we get closer to the close. We have to see the muddle that was going on. the model that was being created was not to tell you what was going on with the interest rate. That's why there's a LIBOR lawsuit right now, because, see, back then they could charge you 12, 13%, 14% interest, and you had no idea what the interest rate was or how it worked. So in the end, you were paying a whole lot of money out for a house. Some people were paying thousands of dollars out for a house that was not even valued to that amount. Some people went into mortgage companies and they were told, oh, look, you know, we got this deal, we take good care of you, don't worry about it, you got this house, you know, and then when you signed on the dotted line at the end, the closing, the house would be, say, for instance, it was a low-end house, about $120,000, you were paying $1,500, and that was inclusive of the interest rate. Not only to mention the insurance. Now, a lot of people didn't even know anything about the insurance binders. There was an insurance that was put on the house, and if you defaulted within a certain period, you could have gotten that money to pay the period that you were defaulting in. So that money went into another account. A lot of people still have not collected on that money, but it was there. It was under Magic Insurance, it was called. It was there. It was like magic. Bam, it was there. And then if you went into a situation where your house was foreclosed on, it gave you a cushion of a few months where you could use that policy to pay your note for 2 or 3 months till you get back on your feet if you lost your job. But nobody told you these things. Again, these insurance policies have been wrapped in a very high blanket of secrecy. When it comes down to the house that you're in, if you have repairs, I noticed it with car repairs too, it seems as though the party I spoke to and the other people they're alluding to are right. There's redlining. Claims are not paid immediately. Somebody would be hit by a truck on the expressway, and they'll get $1.5 billion or something like that, and you get hit the same way, and you're all messed up, end up in the hospital. Guess what? You get hardly nothing. You're still in court. And then in the end, who gets the money? It's the insurance company, the attorneys, everybody but you. You don't get anything hardly at all. But certain other people get $1.5 million, $2 million. Claims are handled differently. Why? That's on automobile insurance. And then when you get to homeowners policy, and in fact, I worked in that industry too. I worked in claims. Interesting enough, certain houses, certain areas, went by zip code or where these things were located in various states, a lot of those claims were not paid immediately. People would be sitting in the house and, you know, saying, hey, you know, my roof is gone from, you know, water damage, from storm damage, from, you know, this and that and the other. And those claims went on and on and on. And then the condition got worse and worse. And it went by zip code, who got paid and who didn't. Because, again, as I told you, I worked in many, many areas of different industries. I saw things from behind the scene, which I'm basically ratting out right now because it's not right, and somebody needs to get on this because, you know, we got the president coming down on us telling us that we have to have this Obamacare thing, and I'm totally against it because, again, if you can have Obamacare, you can have a situation where the hospitals are actually curing diseases and helping you out instead of putting death panels together and robbing and raiding you in the end if something happens to you and your family gets nothing. The course of the situation has gotten so bleak and horrible, it's moved over from not only the black community and Latino community, now it's hitting the white community as well. I've had people come to me about these mortgages they had, mortgages that they didn't even understand, and they signed on them because it sounded so sweet. People wanted to get a home. In the 60s, it was, you know, the home buying boom was there, but the worst of worst came in the late 80s and 90s when it got out there that, you know, you weren't a citizen unless you owned a property. You didn't own a house. If you were renting, it was like, you don't exist. But if you owned a house, you became a person. So in the 90s, I even talked to senators, they were friends of mine, and friends of shows and things, and we talked about this, and they said, well, you become a citizen when you buy a house. But be a citizen and buy a house when you never own it. You don't own it. The bank owns it. Somebody else, royal family owns it. You don't own that house. As long as you keep paying money onto that house, you never own it. So what's the difference than somebody renting down the street from you or you being in the house? The only difference is that you got a title and they don't. They're a renter. You're still paying rent. If you have to pay insurance, you have to pay a dime for taxes, you have to pay this, you have to pay that, and it comes out to $900, $800, whatever dollars amount a month, you don't own it. You're still paying someone, so you have no ownership right. They'll tell you that. It's merely a swap of words, kind of like credit default swap. It's a swap of words. And a credit default swap, by the way, was another insurance game. They would take your home, bundle it up, and put a value to all these homes. They bundled up like $4 or $5 billion or something. And they would put the amount of the value of the house in the bank and say that it was collateralized by a insurance policy, a non-existent insurance policy that was backed by nothing. They had nothing tied in that would, if that whatever they did with playing with the money overseas and different derivative markets didn't work out, then the way that they thought is that they would swing a deal, make the money, stick the money back in the account, and nobody would know the better. But then what happened was it came out that these things started failing because the gamble didn't go right. So then when they went back to get these credit default swaps or this insurance policy to kick in, there was no insurance policy because insurance had nothing backing it. So the thing is, we're being played another game. The game is a risk to us and them. They get everything. They get the money. They get everything. Everything, everything. And we're a slave because we just go out and work and dig up money and put it on all these different things. And if you don't have it, then they can come in and send regulators after you and say that you didn't do this and, you know, didn't dot the I or E or whatever. But the thing is that these people are robbing us blind. There needs to be accountability in the insurance industry. Now, halt this, halt the thought for a minute, because immediately you say, oh, the state has a regulation board, the insurance board. Look, call that sucker up. Give a call. I did that. I was in an accident, couple, too, in fact. I called them up in regards to things that happened with this accident, the first one and the second one, and their response was, well, we don't handle that. You need to go and take that over, issue over to the health department. You need it. You will pass the buck. And then my response back was, why are you getting a check? See, my thing is, why are we paying these people that respond to us in offices that are supposed to be handling things, and they respond to us saying well, they don't handle it? So if you were in a job and you told somebody you didn't handle it, would they not fire you? So why are these people still working? We are not thinking smart here. We're being bamboozled, robbed, and raped daily. It's a pitiful shame when I hear people, like the gentleman contacted me, his whole house was ruined by a storm. Water came in, messed up the gutters, this, that, and the other. Anyway, he's been pondering and fighting this situation with an insurance claim for several years now. He's African American. And what has happened, because he has gone in, the deductible on this particular place was $10,000, which he paid. Then he had all the bills and statements to give to the insurer. Got a letter from the Illinois State Insurance Controller telling him that they were going to pay the claim in December. You know what? They haven't given him a dime. Gave him a small amount of money, which wasn't related to the claim, but he's now $20,000 in the red. But then other people, they have the claims. They're not African-American, seemingly, from what is being discussed here, in which I'm investigating, are getting their claims back. Houses rebuilt. Why is that? And again, this is 2015. Just think about this for a while. Well, I'm going to do another program on it, but I'm just bringing this out because I'm going to do a whole lot more investigation on this issue. Because seemingly we don't have anyone investigating many issues that are confronting us in the black community. It's great to march around, but again, that was like 60s, 70s stuff, and we're in a whole other space age, electronic age, that things need to be handled in a whole other fashion. Oh, let's talk about Illinois, too. We have a new governor, Rayner. Now, Rayner had come in, and he said he's going to go over the budget. Oh, my God. He's going to look and see what's going on, why this is this and this is that. And we're going to see what happens in the next couple of weeks. Because, you know, he's talking about some deep issues here going into Illinois budget. We have a school system that gets money from the lottery. And it's not just state lottery anymore. It goes international. People paying the lottery, and it's all the zillions of dollars going in the lottery. I forgot how much the percentage is supposed to go to schools. But why is there so much problems in the school that they don't have any money still? Then you have the cigarette lawsuit that's still paying in fund for the situation in the schools. And then you had the asbestos thing. I went to a couple of asbestos meetings, and they had asbestos in these schools, and money came in, and that went into another whole fund. So now, all of a sudden, we got some guy that is saying, we're going to look at the budget, the new governor. I hope he can do something. But then we're talking a dangerous walk of life he's going into because, you know, do they really want him to go through the budget? And then if he does go through the budget and finds any improprieties, what is he going to be willing to do? And can he do anything? I recall when we had this crime buster U.S. attorney came in, Fitzgerald. He said, I am Al Capone. Not Al Capone, Elliot Ness. I'm going to bust down all the criminals and stuff. I don't care. I'm not married. Well, that lasted for whenever he retired because, again, he started settling down and finding out what Illinois was about, and seemingly he just kind of like vanished and disappeared out of the, into the abyss. You called them up about, you know, real terrorist activity. Not these guys that they're pulling up some 18-year-old kid that's got a plane saying he's going to Turkey. Who cares? There was another. At least he was leaving. You got to stop and put them back over here. Then you have these other people they claim are terrorists, but the real homegrown terrorists, they got them on the streets. Some of them are bank residents. Some of them working right next to you. They know who they are because, you know, hey, I reported a whole bunch of them. Other people I know, whistleblowers, we all reported what we saw. They're still out here. And they weren't Arabs. And they weren't Muslims. So, you know, have the government explain that. How you got these people roaming around that aren't Arabs, they ain't Muslim, and then, you know, they've tried to slide it over the black community, you know, because we have the Nation of Islam. And of course, they got to be, you know, what? Come on now, please. Please. There's something bigger going on that you don't have a clue of what is happening. The same thing that happened down there in France. I was tracking the gentleman that owned that publication. He had Parkinson's. He was French and Italian. And he went through a very interesting thing during World War II where he was almost put in a prison camp. You know, who did he make mad to step on? They're going to say it's Islam. No, it's deeper than that. I'm still looking into this. Because what they report is not what the true facts are. What they report is what they want you to do because the mainstream media is totally controlled. Totally controlled. And we're just the muse. We sit there and watch. We're voyeurs watching whatever they put before us. Just like those planes disappearing. How does a whole plane disappear? Nobody's got anything that works, but then they got all these cameras out. They're charging us huge amounts of money for these cameras to watch things. but they can't find planes. People are missing. Serial killers are running amok. They can't find nobody doing nothing, but they got all these cameras they're forcing you pay for. And then turn around and tell you they don't have any money, and then on the back door tell you, oh, we're going to Venus. We're going to put a space station out in Venus. How the heck are you going to afford a space station when you can't afford to take care of the people that are on this planet? Oh, well, we're going to grab some energy from Venus and bring it down here to you. How are you going to grab energy and move it down here? You know how big a planet is? You know how big Venus is? How, you know how many years it would take for us to get to Venus and to harvest whatever the hell they're talking about and bring it here? It's totally baseless. Makes no sense. But they'll let you believe it. Collect money from you. Well, you know, the thing is, you know, that's the reason. I guess I was kind of, like, thinking about things while I wasn't on the air for the last week. I was kind of, like, mulling over. And I was, like, been on the air over 20 years of AM radio and different stations all over. Have had most of the top, highest level whistleblowers on, CIA agents, FBI agents, people out of the science community at the top level, professors, everything you can think of, you know, under the sun. It's been on my show. And the bottom line is, right now, I'm kind of like aghast. I'm like, wow, you know. And people, we're still going through the same thing. And we hear all this stuff and we got all this information. It's not helping us grow. What we need now to do is, we know what's going on. The few out there that understand and get it, you know, hey, sit back and say, okay, what can we do to work around this? Because they're going to continue to do, and eventually it's going to go down just like, you know, Nero and Stalin, all these other people, you know, they all just eventually just get to the level that they just disappear. Whatever movement that they have, it doesn't work out. It just blows up. We, on the other hand, after they blew up everything and whatever, we scurry out of our holes or spots that we're hiding out in and try to rebuild a nation again. It goes on all the time. The United States is in that pinnacle right now. But I'm just going to put warning zones out there. Black folks, you better get out there and start watching what's getting ready to happen, because they're talking about, okay, this year they're going to start a mandated program. Everybody goes on food stamps has to be drug tested. But then, yeah, on the other corner, they'll say, oh, we're legalizing marijuana. They're not legalizing it. They're giving you a ticket. And it still means it's still a substance that's a misdemeanor. It's still a situation they could come in and take your kids, and they could also charge you with a crime of having drugs, which they give you a ticket. You still got to pay for it. So now, the thing is that they are putting out falsehoods, and you're believing it. So on the end of food stamps, they're going to be drug tested, so if they find marijuana in your system, which stays in there for a couple of days or weeks or whatever, hey, that means you don't get any food stamps. That's phase one. Phase two in 2016 is that if you're a single person and you get food stamps, you're not going to get them anymore. You're going to be kicked immediately off the rolls. Then the next level is those single moms out there and people out there getting food stamps. They're going to cut them so far back, you're not going to even know they exist. Sorry, I had to go for a second, but that's the plan. So what do you have to counteract the plan? Same thing with Section 8. We run out here and we try to get these Section 8 vouchers. I saw the most hideous thing back there in the 80s. I was living downtown and a whole bunch of people had Section 8, and they lived in South Loop. And they were all enjoying the apartments that they had and were paying $20 a month living downtown. Excuse sorry, living downtown in a loop. And then what happened? The owners of the property came back and said, okay, no more Section 8. You got 2 months to move out. Now, mind you, these people were in these buildings probably for 10, 15 years. They had $20 a month. They didn't have income enough to, you know, circumvent this. You go into a unit in the same building, it was $900 a month. So they all lost their units. Ended up out in the street. There were apartment buildings all over. This was when Jane Byrne was in office. And this is when everything was turning over the condo. I got stories to tell what I saw. What I saw was this dastardly thing. They went condo. Everything was going condo. It was forcing people out of apartments, and then people were trying to buy homes. And then they started selling these condominium things, and then I was watching what happened with condos. And then the condo game was, you know, con, C-O-N. And then you think, don't. Take your dough. Con, the conning you out of your dough. Condo. Okay, so condos were going up all over the place. And the thing was, a lot of these places, like these apartment buildings, didn't even own the land. So you had people in these condos, and they thought that they had brought their unit. And then what would happen is the owner would end up in court with the person that owned the land, and they said, well, your lease is up. We want the building back. Get everybody out of there. And mind you, he already sold all these condo units. So everybody ended up evicted. He went bankrupt. Nobody could collect money off of him. So everybody lost money in the condo. Condo was a game. Con, B-O-N, con you out of your dough. And then I was looking at these units, you know, these skyscraping high-rise apartment buildings. I'm looking at it like, somebody, you know, had some of these buildings were like $20,000, $400,000, $500,000, $600,000, $700,000, and it just kept going up and up and up, $1 million now for a condo unit. And the thing is, if something happens to the building, what do you own? You own airspace? How do you recover airspace? What value is in that? See, I'm looking things in other, you know, I was living in an apartment building in Lincoln Park back in the 70s. That's where they went going all this condo thing. And I was like, huh, you know, and it was a real nice apartment building right across from the zoo. And they said, oh, you can get your unit for real cheap. Okay, on the open market, it's going to be $56,000, but we're going to give it a special because you live here already. It's $40,000. And I was looking at it and thinking about it. Love my unit. It was really nice and easy, accessible, get out right there, and bam, bam, right to work. I thought about it. I said, something happens to the building, what happens to me? What happens if, you know, there's something that takes out the building? I don't have anything. What's the point? Then the thing that was nasty is the condo association. I got involved with the condo association twice. I'll never, ever, ever do that again. Condo association can be the most treacherous, evilest thing on the face of the planet because you might own a unit, pay for it, and the condo association might not like you. So then the condo association will say, well, everybody's going to have a green refrigerator. Now, maybe you don't want a refrigerator, but if they voted that way, hey, you got to get a green refrigerator. Or the outer unit somewhere outside, they want a water fountain. You have to pay into that. You have to pay into things that you never thought. So whatever you pay to your unit is one cost, but the other cost comes about with the groundkeeping and all this other stuff and whatever they add on. So condos are not what you think they are. They're traps, money traps to me. But then what are you going to do when most of the property is in a situation condo? But now we have a renter's market going on because everybody losing their home during the mortgage crisis. So places like out in the suburbs, the rents used to be $400 or $500 a month have now skyrocketed to $900. $1,200, $1,500 a month. And even in areas that are, you know, used to be poor areas in Chicago, they're charging $800-$900 a month for units there. I remember going over in Uptown, they changed that name to Brownsville or something, and changed the name, made it all condos over there. And then what they did was try to gentrify it. So what they did was get rid of the people that they thought were eyesores. Now, going back into that story, in the news just recently, police officer was arrested, two or three of them, for shooting a whole bunch of homeless people. A shooting. I had been told that by some other homeless people in the suburbs that I had this little form for, but they were talking about how they were out at night and somebody would roll up on them, a police officer, and shoot them. Now, the thing is, how do they call 911? Who do they go to if 911 is attacking them? Then you had the old man today and yesterday, I guess he was 80 or 90 years old. What happened with him? He got hit with one of those bean bags. It was, a 90-year-old man. It was in a nursing home, and he didn't want some kind of medication treatment. So the nursing home called the police, and the police came in, and they shot him with a bean bag, and it killed him in the nursing home. So that's just coming to trial now. That's, like, been pending for 3 or 4 years. But the officer involved said that he was told to do that to a 90-year-old guy, ex-World War II veteran. And it goes on and on and on. And then, you know, we look at the police thing, you know, oh, they're evil and things like that. Well, don't you think that they're doing this because they're trying to get rid of the police because they also have pensions and they want the police pension fund? You know, all of a sudden all these police are doing, they've been doing this for I don't know how long. All of a sudden now it's a big interest in evil police. They were evil before when we had this guy Burris out here. You know, he was out there, and he was going around shooting people and beating them up in the Cook County lockup and stuff like that. And he got off of little or nothing. Had been doing that for years and years and years. Retired, had his whole pension, and they locked him up for a while. I think he's out. But the thing is, it's not anything new. So why is it all of a sudden every state got all these evil cops? There's a situation there, you know, trying to get rid of them so you can put privatized police force in that's much cheaper for them to deal with. And if it's privatized, the government doesn't have to pay for it. And they got more money now because they can sell the whole police department over to some other foreign government. We have no clue of what we're looking at. This, like I said, there's some evil forces out here that is just unbelievable. But the only way that you can get around it is to try to work a way to make sure you have plenty for your home, your household, get with your community, get with the people in the community, network with them, watch your kids. I mean, really watch your kids. Get to a point where you can communicate and get respect for everybody that you have in your community and block. Because this stuff is getting ready, when it hits, it's going to be isolation. First thing, they isolate you from everyone. They put you in a situation where you can't recover economically, spiritually, emotionally. Then they got you. So anyway, I'm going to stop the show for a minute now, and I will be back on, but like I said before, I'm looking into the redlining and all this stuff, and then in the next hour I come back on, we're going to talk about Bill Cosby, what I think. And let me kind of give you a hint on that real quick. With Bill Cosby, I remember what was going on back in the 60s and 70s, and I remember black entertainers and sports figures and their little encampments they had with women and this, that, and the other. Most of those women were, you know, brought in, and families were okay with it because, again, they were sports figures, somebody famous or something. I have a problem with somebody, you know, crying rape 20, 40 years in advance, and they are not African American or Latino, And they're saying that they could not go to somebody and nobody would do anything about the incident. I don't buy that. I don't buy it, but I will tell you, if you're African-American and trying to get somebody to approach something like that, they won't, the police, none of these people won't react to it. I'm telling you from fact of what I know. But if it's somebody that is non-white, black, back then, especially in the 60s and 70s, there's something twisted with the story, and I think they're trying to defame Bill Cosby. But again, and I'll say it to all these folks out here that have all this money and all this stuff that they talk about they have. Magic Johnson came back in the community. He's been trying to do things over the years. What have you done to the community to get the community to support you? It's cool to be, you know, a figure, this, that, and the other, but when somebody comes to you with an idea or something that they want to approach to make something better for them, their community, why can't you get involved? And I don't have anything. When people come to me, I do help. But you all got money out there. So what's up with that? And then when somebody does something to you, you want our community to come back and support you when you haven't done anything for the community itself. And indeed, he did do something to make a positive image out there. But again, what has he done for the community itself? Now, I remember when he used to come out to Operation Push, because I was at Operation Push. I was the media group there. I saved a whole bunch of people's jobs and did a lot from Operation Push headquarters. I remember him coming out there, and I know that he was around in the 60s and stuff, but I think about, you know, some of the things that these people could have orchestrated and done and brought into the community, and it's not there. So I'm not kind of, you know, putting him down, but I'm saying there's more to this story than what meets the eye. And I would say that to these women, it's horrible, a tragedy if it happened, but my question to you is, why would you wait so long? I know other women that were in the industry that got roof and all, and a lot of them were blackmailed off of the roof and all and stuff. And the thing was, horrible. And a lot of them don't have memory of what happened. But I will talk about that on another show.